Hello and welcome to the latest edition of the EDP F1 podcast. I am not Michael Bailey. I am in fact his longtime sidekick, as he would have you believe, Perry Hamilton. Taking over hosting duties this week as Michael is away on some very important business elsewhere, but we look forward to having him back after Abu Dhabi. But first of all, we're here to round up the India Grand Prix. So it's my pleasure to say namaste to the gents who are with me to talk about the rundown from the weekend. We've got Kyle Cumberth and Dave Attilia.
Hello there.
Hi, how's it going?
Yeah, very well. Yourselves, gents, you all okay? We're all good?
Very good, yeah.
And we are actually here recording on Halloween, so you know, trick or treat to you both, and hopefully it'll be a treat for you listeners out there, and not so much of a trick. Did you both enjoy the Grand Prix? Was it all good?
It was a pretty good Grand Prix for India.
Yeah. It says this is only the second Grand Prix India's had, so you know, terms of the precedent set last year, this one was okay as well.
Yeah, it was. Slightly better than last year. The battle for second place made it interesting.
Very much.
It was an average race for this season.
Yeah.
6 out of 10.
Six out of ten. David, any advance on 6 out of 10, or actually a bit of a reduction on your eyes?
Well, no, it was good. It was an average race. I totally agree. The start was really quite interesting. I can't remember exactly what happened, but I remember it being interesting. And the last few laps were not too bad as well.
Yeah.
It was a bit of an interesting battle towards the end, but, the bit in between, fairly beige, I would say.
Yeah, a cup of tea making time.
Yeah.
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 Fair enough. You don't feel like you're going to miss much. We've got to talk about the man in form at the moment. Seb Vettel, looking very strong on track. There's only 13 points in the championship, though. I mean, that's one win. That's one win for Alonso and one DNF for Seb. I mean, do we think that's likely to happen, or is this pretty much wrapped up here, David? What do you reckon?
The only way that it can happen, I think, is that if Red Bull have any unreliability or someone punts Vettel off the track. I think, given the way things are going at the moment, it would be a safe prediction to say that he's going to win the next race. He goes pretty well at Yas Marina anyway.
Mm.
So I would say he's probably going to pick up another 25 points. Alonso is probably going to maximise his points, but he hasn't quite got the car to challenge for the podium, really.
Mm.
If third place at best on outright pace. I'd say the chances of having a big loss of points for the Red Bull team is unlikely.
I mean, it was a good run from Alonso in the race. He came all the way up from fifth to get, second place. Mm. I mean, did you see that coming, Kyle? I mean, he's still confident he can win the whole kit and caboodle. Can he do that again? If he qualifies a little bit higher, can he make it into the first corner? I mean, do you see it being possible?
Yeah, I think with I think the only way they can beat Vettel is to beat him in the first corner. And from Alonso starting fifth, he's going to struggle to do it. I mean, he got good starts this Sunday, which he needed to keep the championship alive and get second position from his fifth position is a good result. And I mean, he sort of gained points, really, because it could have been a bigger loss and even more of a points deficit. So, like I said, anything can happen. But at the moment, he's going to struggle to beat him.
So you say the best way to beat Seb Vettel is to beat him in the first corner. What about beating him in qualifying? Because, I mean, we've seen how hard that's going that is this year, because he had to abort his run because he skidded off the track. So he only had chance to do one clean run. And what do you know? It's the fastest clean run of the afternoon. I mean, is he beatable when his car's that light and set up? Is he fastest in qualifying trim, or is he actually, he's fast in both? But do you think qualifying is the reason why he's ahead so much?
I think the double DRS allows them to run more downforce in qualifying. So it's less of a speed deficit on them. But I think if they could get ahead of them in the first corner, they could. I mean, especially this season and previous season, Pirelli's. If you get up front, you can control a race. And I think if somebody else is there in front of them, that could make them, Red Bull, do other things that could create problems for them. But yeah, I mean, even if it was second in the first corner, car was so strong that they could end up winning anyway. So
yeah, you still see them being able to make a push for it, and actually, they're not the kind of car that gets stuck behind someone else. They can still make overtaking manoeuvres and things like that.
Yeah.
And we've seen both, Mark Webber and Seb Vettel are very, very quick in doing that. Speaking of someone who looked quick, Lewis Hamilton. God, was it nice to see a smile on his face after the race, wasn't it? I mean, you know, didn't get onto the podium, but came pretty close. And he said he feels it's as good a race as he's had in McLaren colours. I mean, impressive steering wheel change in the pit stops as well there.
That was very good, yeah.
Absolutely, you know, and he says they practice that. So obviously, you know, you'll go whole seasons without having to use it. And then suddenly, bam, you need to do it. And, you know, no butterfingers, nothing stuck, nothing went. I mean, they changed it quicker than they changed. What was it? He said in the pits, you know, it was five wheels changed instead of just four. Yeah. So, you know, that was great. But I mean, just talking about Lewis, he's shown the skills that can make a team into a contender in this race. I mean, you know, the McLaren is not the out and out fastest car on the track right now. It was at the beginning of the season. Everyone else has caught up. They've kind of stayed standing still. And if you're standing still in Formula One, you're going backwards. We all know that. So he can make the team into a contender. Can Mercedes supply the car? Because we're now seeing what can happen if you have a car that isn't up to par with the rest of the field. So he's jumped off to Mercedes. Do you think, David, that Mercedes will be able to give him a car that will win a championship?
My gut feeling, no. Not championship, anyway. The difficult thing with Mercedes is that they've had quite a lot of resource. And they've had two pretty cracking drivers for the last 3 years. And they've not done anything with it. You know, they've had one win in 3 years. They are capable of winning the championship. They proved that when they were brought. But they were kind of lucky that they stole the march on everyone else when the rules changed. The only thing that's interesting at the moment is I read an interview with Michael Schumacher, and he said that Mercedes will learn from the mistakes they made at the Indian Grand Prix, not Korean Grand Prix, where they probably need to learn from the mistakes they made in the last few Grand Prix.
They could learn from a few mistakes this season, couldn't they? Certainly.
Exactly. But they, you know, they may come back strong. You can never tell. I mean, Lotus, who would have predicted that Lotus would be as strong as they have been? Okay. Yes, they haven't won a race, but they've been consistent.
And you yourself, you say, you know, this team's come from being Braun, and Braun came out of nowhere. We didn't even think they'd be racing in 2009, and suddenly there they are winning championships.
Yeah, so, exactly.
From a technical standpoint, I don't know, because you are the more technical of the three of us around this table. I mean, it's not going to, we're not talking about, you know, a proper degree here or anything, but you're more technical minded out of all of us.
You could say I'm a geek.
He's a tech geek, right? How much is the difference between what was Braun and what is Mercedes? Because you would think championship winning car, all they're doing is changing the colour on the outside. It's still the same guys. You know, okay, it's a different driver setup, but you've still got that fast car. How different is that? How much was forced to change from when it was Braun, and why didn't it win as many races?
Well, what you've got to look at is you've got to look at the 19 races they had in 2009. Yes, they were dominant at the start of the season because they had something that other people didn't, and they made it work. They read the rules in a particular way, they interpreted it a particular way, and they went down that route. And only them, and I think Toyota and it might be one other team, went down that route from day one. And they just made it work better. But with the rest of the season, they just went backwards. And it was only because they were so dominant at the start of the season and Jenson Button managed to stay consistent and, you know, maximise his points as much as he could throughout the season, that they won both championships. The difference now is that you've got someone like Red Bull who are overly dominant. Now, what Red Bull will do is they'll take their 2009 car, and then which was quick, and then they evolve it to the 2010 car, which was quick and won the world championship, and then they evolve it again to 2011, and then they win the world championship again, and it's quicker. And they're just slowly evolving what is actually a base platform, which is fundamentally a great car. As opposed to what a lot of other teams are doing is they're developing a car, finding out that it's not right, scrapping it and doing something else, and then they've got stuck. So Red Bull already have that leg up as opposed to Mercedes. They don't have a great car, so they don't have that platform to build from.
So, speaking of Red Bull, we've mentioned, you know, Vettel, he's dominant because that helps as well. Having a guy who's ridiculously quick to be able to put in your car, you know, is wonderful. How important is Webber? Kyle, in Sebastian's title chase? I mean, is he now officially a rear gunner? Is that what he's there to do? Is he a buffer? Because before the race, I mean, he was, you know, he came in third on the podium, which is great for him. But before the race, he was talking on the grid and he was talking to David Coulthard, and he said, you know, any chance you're going to have a go, you know, at Seb in the first corner? And, a little bit of a wry smile from Mark. And he says he's still going to race. Him and Seb have talked about it. They're clear. he wants to win. I mean, I don't know if this is going to express, I don't know if he's expressing the view of the team. He's expressing his own view. He wants to race. He wants to win as much as he can. He wants to show that there's still fight in him. So realistically now, he's got no chance. Is he racing for pride? Do you think Red Bull will try and curb him in line to keep Sebastian's title hopes alive? What do you recommend?
I think he'd never admitted that he was supporting Sebastian. I think Red Bull kind of know that he is a little bit slower than Sebastian. So he'll always be that certain bit behind him. I think he realizes now before that he's got no chance in the championship. I think he's a good enough guy, should we say, to, if it wasn't a position where he, maybe where he had to sell past, then he probably would. But I think he's still the option. I think he'd still try to win, but if it was best for the team, I think he would. I don't mean Red Bull would have to ask him. I think that he would set aside.
Yeah, he's a smart driver, Mark Webber, isn't he? He knows what's going on around him on the track. He's always kind of there. And a lot, as you say, a lot of the time, you don't need to ask him or tell him. He's always intuitive in many ways, you could say. So,
and to a large extent, Red Bull haven't had to do that because, you know, when Seb came back into the championship, you know, when he was getting the wins, when he was getting the good finishes and what have you, he was the quicker guy anyway. Red Bull didn't have to say to Mark, come on, you know, you need to start supporting him. And I don't think they'll need to. Mm. And like you both say, Mark might not say to the press that he's going to be a rear gunner, but he will quite happily do what needs to be done if and when the time comes to it.
Yeah, if it's not going to be me, I'd rather it's my teammate. Yeah. That kind of attitude is what he does.
Which is the right attitude to take.
As a team player, especially in Formula 1, now that team orders are so explicit. Right. That's the race. It's that time. We're going to talk about pit stops. We're going to do the EDP F1 pit stops. Have a little bit of a theme on this one due to the fact that it is Halloween time. We're going to talk about buyer's remorse, trick or treat. Okay. So, how did McLaren feel about Sergio Perez now? When the news broke, Perez was coming off some fantastic drives. Hamilton was underperforming. Now, two consecutive DNFs for Perez. Hamilton is making a dog of a car look very competitive. So, Perez to McLaren, trick or treat?
Trick from the point of view, best for bad situation, I think.
Okay.
I don't think they want...
By that you mean sort of trick for McLaren, but treat for Perez? Is kind of...
Sorry, I meant treat, right, from both points of view. Okay. In the sense that there's not that many people on the grid that they could have gone to. I think Raikkonen was going to stay where he was, you know. There wasn't many options on the table, but Perez is a good option. He's a good driver. He is, as McLaren put it this week, still a work in progress. So they don't expect him to be stellar out of the gate. They want to take him on, develop him. Jensen will be the number one driver. Perez will be the new guy who will probably, I think, do very well.
He's only 22 as well, so he's got the same age. Lewis Hamilton joined McLaren, so.
McLaren Formula 1. Brought up through the ranks from a very young age, hasn't he? That's it.
But, I mean, there's a lot of talent then to work with. Next year, a bit of a worry for McLaren.
All right. So seeing how happy Lewis was after the race, does he have any second thoughts about leaving the team and going to Mercedes? And you look at how inconsistent Mercedes have been. So Lewis to Mercedes, trick or treat. Now, looking at the information we've got after the last few races, trick or treat?
Say trick. Easily, because you have to go on form. I think they say you know, form is temporary and class is permanent. But if you look at permanent form, I think I tweeted about this a while back. If you look at what Mercedes have done in terms of sort of their ratio of wins, I think it was 1 in 23 races they've ever done it, they win, and McLaren do 1 in 4 across their entire sort of longer history of being a racing team. So you've just got to, you know, if you were a betting man, you'd bet with McLaren. And I think Lewis is foolish to go where he's going, unless he thinks, I'm not going to win the World Championship for a while, I might as well earn as much money as I can.
So it's a financially backed move. Kyle, to McLaren, to Mercedes, trick or treat?
It's a tough one, really. I'm still either way, really. I can't
if you would answer the door to trick or treaters, they would have egged your house by now. You need to come up with a decision. Come on here.
I agree at the moment. At the moment, trick. I don't know if he's thinking ahead to 2014, the regulation change, the engines. But I think it's a long way to look ahead.
Well, now I heard something very interesting here, chaps, so maybe you can help me out here. I heard that come 2014 with the regulation changes, if they go ahead, because I'm hearing that both Luca de Montezemolo and Bernie Eccleston are hating the changes and the developments and they don't want them to go ahead, so they're going to try and block it, try and get Jean Todt to reverse it, what have you. However, I've heard a rumour that McLaren want out of their Mercedes contract and back in with Honda, who they used to be supplied with in the late 80s, early 90s. And I've heard Honda are very interested in coming back into Formula One as a supplier. So, at that point, things very much change. And to what extent do you think suddenly McLaren not wanting a Mercedes engine is anything to do with Mercedes and Lewis Hamilton? I mean, do things get that political in the pit lane, do you think?
I think Ron just doesn't want to buy engines.
Right. $8 million next year it was going to cost them to have Mercedes engines for 2014. $8 million.
Well, $8 million is a drop in the ocean for them, considering their yearly budget for their Formula One team is something in the region of 200 and something million pounds.
So he's grudging a relatively small amount for engines, which to me suggests there might be more behind the move.
Well, I think McLaren have tried to separate themselves from Mercedes for quite a while, both in their F1 efforts and their road car efforts, because as you may or may not know, McLaren produced a car for Mercedes for a while, limited edition SLR. It was Mercedes badged, had a Mercedes engine, but it's built in Woking at the Formula One factory. It was a McLaren car, just with Mercedes engine and badging on it. Then when they decided to build the next car, rather than go with Mercedes and do a joint venture again, use Mercedes AMG power plants, which are well known and well trusted, they didn't. They built their own car, their own chassis, and they designed their own engine to go in it. So the engine in the new McLaren is a McLaren engine. So they are trying to separate themselves a bit. The Honda thing doesn't surprise me a little, you know, but I think engines, people talk about engines for 2014 being, you know, big rule change and what have you. Ultimately, you look at the way engines are at the moment. It doesn't really matter what engine you've got in the back of your car. If you've got the right aerodynamic package, you are going to win. The Renault engine isn't the strongest engine on the field, on the grid, apparently. But Red Bull seems to be doing a pretty good job with it. So that's the way I see it going. I think the strong teams will always be strong.
No matter what their engines are.
Yeah.
Okay. So, but looking at that, do you think that having this extra year, Carl, to develop this engine? Because, I mean, okay, manufacturers are already in Formula One. They're going to be looking to, you know, develop this engine down the line for the existing contracts they have. Mm-hmm. But Honda don't have to worry about maintaining an upkeep on a current engine. All they've got to do is put money into their R&D and pop out this new engine. So do you think this would possibly give them a head start, and maybe that's why McLaren are looking at them?
They could do, and also they would be the Honda works team, which kind of Renault are with Red Bull. So I think the same advantage with Mercedes is that they'll develop their engine and they can build their car around that, and then they just go, their teams, there's our engine. But with Honda there, they can work closely with Honda where they can work closely with Mercedes.
Hmm.
So it could be a huge advantage, and it would be good to have another engine supplier, another manufacturer in Formula One as well.
Could be interesting. And could you imagine if they got a different title sponsor from Vodafone and they reverted to a white and red livery?
Oh, it'd be fantastic.
And then took on Bruno Senna in the second seat.
Oh.
And then it would be like the early the late 80s all over again.
Oh, he's living in the past, ladies and gentlemen. We've got a couple more pit stops that we need to jump in on. That one took a little bit longer. That was starting to look more like a Mauritius pit stop rather than a Red Bull pit stop. Or what was the quickest pit stop over the weekend that we had? 2.8 seconds as an Alonso, I believe.
I thought Red Bull had a 2.6.
Oh, did they? Right, well, sure that might have been when I was making a cup of tea, as they say. So, yes. Speaking of Ferrari, though, another solid performance from Massa. Now, this is a good trick-or-treat one here. Has he blown his future by taking the first contract that was offered to him by Ferrari? Because he'd been underperforming, his seat was in doubt. He put in a couple of good turns, Ferrari gave him a contract to stay next year, and he jumped on it. Now, the rest of the season, he's been coming better, more solid, good, dependable drives again. If he'd have held out and not signed that Ferrari contract, could we be seeing Massa at McLaren instead of Perez? If McLaren had held out and not signed Perez straight away? And then that would have opened the door for Perez to go to Ferrari, which I know Ferrari said originally, no, he's too young, we want someone more experienced. But
he's quick and he's an academy driver. So, you know, there's ties there. Do we think that Massa has sort of shot himself in the foot? So Massa Ferrari contract looked good then, now trick or treat.
Thanks to the treat.
Yeah.
May only have a 1 year deal, but he settled in that team in a way. Obviously, he got a very good relationship with his race engineer. Got his name there.
Smedley, Rob Smedley.
Yeah, Rob Smedley, sorry. And possibly has a future deal with going back to Sauber and he'll swap with Hülkenberg. Possibly one of the reasons.
So,
I think he may have a long term contract in a way. Team. So, I think definitely,
So you think he's right to just sort of grab the first thing that was offered into him? And he's almost looking at it like a bridge to 2014, I suppose you could say.
Maybe, yeah. And I mean, it's a Ferrari drive.
And if you turn in a stellar season next year, who knows? Yeah. Is that how you kind of view it as well, David?
I think from Massa's point of view, definitely a treat. From Ferrari's point of view, if he carries on the way he's going, then yes. They've still got their number one driver and they've got a good rear gunner. I don't think there was anywhere better he could have gone because I don't see... any chance of him going to McLaren. I think, you know, they knew who they wanted and I think they wanted someone younger. And Perez sort of fits that bill for them. But yeah, definitely a treat for Massa. Bit of a treat for Ferrari. And I think from Massa's point of view, I think he wanted to race for Ferrari or no one else really.
Fair enough. Other driver moves that have gone on around the paddock, we've had Kimi Raikkonen confirmed at Lotus just for next year, so no long term there. He was originally signed for a 2 year deal, he's done 1 year. They've announced that he's definitely going to be back next year. No announcement yet on Romain Grosjean. Is that significant, do you think?
I expect him to be there next season, if it's just sort of lawyers and all that sort of going on to confirm the deal. I'd be very surprised if it changed. I guess. Looking at it from Lotus' point of view, I think it's right to continue them too. I mean, Raikkonen's come back from 2 years off and quick again and like he's never been away. And Grosjean, obviously he's had his problems this year, but he looks quick and I think it's worth continuing with.
It's a smart move for Lotus. They only need one really quick driver and they've got that in Kimi Raikkonen. So signing him again was the right thing to do. Made obvious sense. I think it's the right decision for Lotus to keep their options open because you've got to bear in mind that this is a team that's potentially in financial trouble. You know, they've got their title sponsor Lotus, so, you know, they've got all sorts of problems going on back home, you know, with their £400 million worth of debts and stuff to suppliers and, you know, the staff are not doing anything in the factory and, you know, not building cars. And, you know, they've got no big budget supporters on board from a sponsor point of view. So from that perspective, makes sense for them to keep them. I would say they would best keep their options open until the end of the year. There isn't really anyone that they could take on, but you never know whether a pay driver might turn up at the last minute kind of thing.
Nico Hülkenberg confirmed at Sauber next year. That fills one seat. Kamui Kobayashi still not signed. So where do we see Kobayashi? If he goes, who takes that second seat and who fills in for Hülkenberg? At Force India, sort of three questions will shoot out there. You could see Adrian Sutil make a return to the grid next year for Force India. He knows the team. And if they can't find anyone else that they really like, he will at least, you know, fit into a slot where he's been before and they know he's capable, sort of a bridge driver in many ways. But I think they're probably looking for someone a bit more long term. They'd like to lock up De Resta as well. He's very popular and people are looking at him in a very serious way. So, what do you guys reckon?
I think Kobayashi might struggle to stay on the grid, which is a shame. Spoke about the previous podcast that it's good entertainment. I think Gutierrez is going to be driving next year, especially he drove P1 on the Friday. Apparently, Sergio Perez, severe man flu, but managed to drive in the afternoon. So.
Oh, he's a trooper. He's a trooper.
Yeah, true. So I expect him to be there. So, I think Kobayashi may struggle to stay on the grid. Force India, Sutil would be a good addition, coming back into the team, alongside De Resta. Unless they maybe want to go down. I think I've heard he brings a decent amount of money, but, they may want to bring more because Malia is in financial trouble. But I think Sutil from Fiat Racing side of it would be a good addition to Force India.
I'll keep it simple. I'll make some predictions.
We're going to have to do an off-season prediction league, yeah. But go on.
Gutierrez to Sauber.
Yep.
Kobayashi not to get another drive in F1. Senna to leave Williams and go to Caterham. Bottas to replace Senna at Williams. And possibly Alain Gosrari to make an F1 return.
Ooh.
That should be quite good. And he could fill that seat at Force India. I've not heard any rumours, but that he could slot in quite nicely there.
Yeah.
So that seems to be the most obvious sort of swap around that I can see going on. And then there's a few sort of GP2 drivers kicking around that could fit into gaps if need be.
What do you reckon, possibly, we mentioned Honda coming back in. Could that tie in with Kobayashi? If Kobayashi could get a drive, if Honda had something to say about it, you know, if Honda do start supplying engines to cars, I mean, they've got a ready-made spokesman for their home country. Could that work, or are we clasping at straws there?
I don't think they're that bothered. Well, they are bothered. They would love to have a Japanese driver, you know, winning with a Japanese engine.
But winning is the key word there.
But I think they'd rather win than just sort of try and satisfy, you know, their home sort of crowd, as it were. Unfortunately, there aren't enough good Japanese drivers out there that could fill the seats. It's just unfortunate that the majority of people that are good in F1 come from Europe, or they come when they are from around the world. They generally tend to travel to Europe to hone their skills before they move on to F1.
Well, yes, there was, you know, we're talking about the diversification of the F1 calendar. Fewer races in Europe, more races around the world, Bernie Ecclestone says, because it's an international sport and more money is now coming from outside of Europe than from inside Europe. If that's the case and more places outside Europe are pouring money into this sport, are we going to see a diversification of drivers? Are we going to see drivers coming from, you know, further afield, places where we've not really had successful Formula One drivers? Are we due a successful Indian driver, successful Korean driver, you know, a successful Middle Eastern driver? Are we due one of those?
Well, I think yes, but you've got to think of it more sort of long term, because you've got to build that fan base, you've got to build that desire in the young, you know, people in their sort of like, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9 years old. That's where Formula One drivers start, and by moving into other territories now, they're going to influence kids and hopefully get some more drives coming through. But I don't think we'll see any major change, but probably another sort of 6 or 7 years, maybe.
Okay, well, that was the pit stops. So they kind of got a little bit protracted. Yeah, a little bit long-winded. A little bit. We almost had to drive nose first into the pit and retire the car. But we're back out on track now, fresh set of boots and going strong. Highlight of the race, driver of the race, team of the race. It's that time again, guys. Before we just do that, I'll let you mull on that for a minute. The wonderful Michael Bailey has been in contact with me. He's given me his predictions for the Abu Dhabi race. What he's also done is given me an updated version of Prediction League. Now, Kyle, I believe you were on point with your predictions. The Oracle still returning. That crystal ball needs to stay polished. And both David and Michael were good with their predictions last week as well. I don't think I particularly was. I think I called Alonso to win, as I am doing. So trying to support him as much as I can. By a storming margin, Kyle is leading our league. But Dave's moved up into second place. Michael coming in after him. And then me currently bringing up the rear. I'm the Caterham to David's. I would say, what would we say, David? Is there a Lotus? And Kyle leading the pack from the... Oh, he's a bit more of a McLaren, is he?
Yeah,
okay, all right. At this point in time, he's more of a McLaren, and Kyle leading the way as a storming Red Bull up front. So, we're going to try and rectify that a little bit later, try and knock some predictions out for the Yas Marina and see what happens there. But first of all, India, second year there. You know, there were some good moments, guys. So, Kyle, I'll start with you. Highlight of the race, what was the best part for you?
Two, really. Yeah. First highlight was probably the first lap battle between... Jensen Button, Lewis Hamilton, Fernando Alonso.
Yeah, took the words out of my mouth.
I think probably a lot of people just world-class, world-champion drivers.
And it was exciting from every onboard camera that they showed it from. Yeah, it was good from every angle, wasn't it?
I mean, the battle between Hamilton and Button, you thought, oh, this is going to be good. And then Alonso comes from nowhere, and then Hamilton comes back. And yeah, it was Yeah, really.
And it's good because teammates are kind of, you know, there's a little bit more, their teammates give each other a bit more room. You're not necessarily going to squeeze as hard as you would. But when there's another car in the middle between the two of you, how do you race then? Because you're thinking, well, hang on, if I squeeze him, and then I suppose you've just got to race the first colour that you see, haven't you? And kind of, you know, not think about anything else. But yeah, David, highlight of the race. Actually, sorry, Carl, I cut you off there. You said you had two, didn't you?
No, it's just a quick one. Yeah,
his greedy one. Yeah,
the steering wheel change.
Steering wheel change was outstanding. Yes, that's right. So yes, we've covered that earlier. Go ahead, David.
Well, I think Carl has sort of highlighted the only two highlights of the race for me, because I can't actually remember anything else other than Vettel, you know, moseying on over the finishing line. I can't really remember anything else that apart from maybe Alonso, you know, getting past Webber and coming second. Other than that, it was a fairly dull race.
So, I quite like the tension that was built up. Did Webber have a problem? Did he not have a problem? Was he going to be caught? Was Lewis going to... Was he not? Suddenly he's 3/10 of a lap faster. Then suddenly he's not. And it all kind of, you know, it built up. And the impenetrable calmness in Mark Webber's voice. Kurz is gone. He's like, don't worry, Mark, it will come back. And you can kind of almost imagine him going, righto. And just getting on with it, you know.
It was a bit like a cheese sandwich, you know. It's kind of like the filling is really quite boring, so it makes it overall a pretty crappy sandwich. But if you put some pickle in there, that would be a really nice sandwich.
And at the end of the day...
That's a really weird analogy that
But at the end of the day, if you're really craving a sandwich, at the end of the day, it was a sandwich.
Yeah.
So, you know, at least we're getting sandwiches, whereas, you know, in a month's time, we'll have no sandwiches at all.
Apologies for taking down that road.
We did promise Michael we'd be on our best behaviour. I guess that's out the window. That's out of the bread bin. Right. Team of the weekend. Kyle, go for it.
Team. It's probably going to be Red Bull again. Just the pure pace of the car at the moment. Unbeatable. As I said before. But yeah. Pretty boring, but Red Bull.
Yeah, no one else really seemed to shine for me. David?
Team. You've got to give it to Red Bull. They locked out in the front row again. They did have some trouble with Webber, so maybe that could knock them off a few points, but no one else had a stellar enough day to sort of knock them off the top spot. But it wouldn't be a Red Bull driver for the driver of the day for me, unfortunately.
Okay, so David, you've led into it nicely. Driver of the day, go for it.
Alonso, because car's not... as quick as the Red Bull, but still managed to get second place, still managed to keep himself close in the fight, doing what Alonso always does.
I think I have to agree with that. Second that completely, yes.
Yeah.
Kyle, you in on
totally
that as
agree,
well?
Yeah, I thought Nico Hülkenberg had a really good race as well.
Right,
okay. Position, sort of a bit of an outsider, but yeah, totally agree. Man, Alonso.
Okay, so that's you know, highlight of the race, team in the race, driver of the race for India. Let's get some predictions as we move on this weekend. No breaks, no stops. Quick shoot from India straight over to the Yas Marina at Abu Dhabi. This is a wonderful race as it goes into from night. It sort of goes into dusk. Drivers not so keen on it because of, you know, the light and everything and how it changes. And of course, this wonderful pit lane exit where you end up going under the racing track and coming up on the other side, which you know is only there because someone sat down and went, because I can, so I will. But yeah, as you say, you know, typically it's a track where Vettel has been quick. But what are we reckoning? I've got Michael's emailed in, so we'll drop Michael's first because normally we have to pressure him into making some decisions. So what we've said is Vettel's going to win again, which, let's be honest, if that happens, pretty much has to wrap up the championship. He reckons Kimi Raikkonen, with his newfound security at the team, to join him on the podium. But Alonso's going to have a DNF. Alonso not going to cross the line, score no points. And if that does happen, then that is game, set, and match. Vettel. Kyle, what are you thinking about Abu Dhabi?
I'm going to poll. Vettel's very strong there, and qualifying performance of the Red Bull at the moment. So Vettel poll. I'll go Hamilton win, because you mentioned Vettel's very strong at Abu Dhabi, but Hamilton's also been very strong. Won last year. Previous year, he was leading, and had a brake problem to retire. So, yeah, I can't see. That's how when five in a row, someone's got to go wrong.
Right, okay. Time's gone. Right. You got an outlandish prediction for us? Anything crazy going to happen? What do you reckon?
I think with the long straights, I'm going to say another Toro Rosso. Two Toro Rosso in the points.
Two Toro Rossos in the points. That is outlandish. David, we come to you. Hit me.
Okay, I'm going to be boring and say Vettel's going to get pole and he's going to win.
Okay.
I think Alonso will score well. I'm not quite sure whether or not he will get a podium or not. It depends on how what everyone else does around him, I think.
But
I think Red Bull are going to be have another strong weekend. I'm trying to think of an outlandish kind of prediction to make, and I'm going to say Caterham to get a 12th place.
Caterham for a 12th. So no points, but quite a high finish is good.
I mean, that's. I don't know whether or not they will do it, but that'd be pretty cool if it did come off. And I'm actually kind of starting to think about the prediction leagues when I'm giving my predictions.
So now it's gone from being I don't care, I'll just throw it out there to where's this going to wind me up? Well, I'm going to go with a Lewis Hamilton win. I'm going to go with a Vettel second, and I'm going to say Perez third. And that is my outlandish prediction, is that Perez is going to come back after his two consecutive stops. He's going to storm through, qualify well, and finish even better. And the reason he'll finish so high is because of the way he'll be able to look after his tyres, which is the reason he's done so well this season. So that is our prediction league so far, going for the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix, which is on this weekend. We will be back to talk about that at some point next week. So all that remains to do is to thank my erstwhile guests here, Kyle Cummers and David Tillier, for joining us, and to thank Michael Bailey for letting us run free and sort of have the lunatics take over the asylum for a week. But don't worry, he will be back next week. You can contact him on Twitter at Michael J. Bailey. You can contact David on
at Gridwalk still
for the moment. You can contact Kyle
at K Cumbers,
and you can contact myself at PedHD56. Don't forget, Michael's column in the EDP should be available on Wednesdays. So if you can't grab it in the paper, have a look online at edp24.co.uk/F1. So send us some tweets, let us know what you think, and we hope that you are as gripped by the end of this season coming up as we are, and we will see you after Abu Dhabi.